Broadcasting live from the Biz 1190 studios in Atlanta, Georgia. It's time for the Business Radio X Week in Review. We know you're busy, so we've got you covered. Catch up on the week's top Atlanta business headlines and meet the industry execs and thought leaders who move Atlanta's bottom line. Now, here's your host, Dana Barrett.
Good afternoon. It is Sunday, August 4th. I'm Dana Barrett, and you are listening to the Business Radio X Week in Review here on Biz 1190 AM. And with me again today is my lovely producer, Mike Roy. How are you?
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
Well, you had a hard week, so I'm going to be extra nice to you today.
Oh, well, thanks. That's a change of pace from the first 2 weeks.
I know.
Thank you.
I might change my mind as the show goes on.
Okay. I'll stop talking now.
Yeah. I'm starting out with the plan to be gentle.
Gentle to the lovely producer.
Gentle and kind, right. So before we get into local headlines, which I do have several to cover with you today, I wanted to quickly talk about a sort of national-ish headline, and it's about talk radio, and therefore it's a little bit like we're talking about ourselves since we are talk radio, but anybody who has been sort of paying attention to what's going on in the media may have seen the story about Cumulus Media dropping Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity. So for people who don't really understand what that means, because there's been one of the funny things that's happening is all the liberals are going like, see, haha, told ya, like, not good, right? Well, what's really happening is Clear Channel owns a company called Premier Networks, and that's who produces Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity's shows. And then they sell those shows through syndication to networks all over town. All over the country, not all over town. And Cumulus buys those shows. And what happened is Cumulus is essentially then, if you think about it, buying from their competitor, Clear Channel, right? And Cumulus, who, by the way, is an Atlanta-based company, which is partly why this is an Atlanta-based story, the talks broke down with Premier Networks over the price of distributing these shows. And so they've decided not to continue. Now, there was some controversy earlier in the year about Cumulus's relationship with Rush Limbaugh, where their CEO, Lou Dickey, sort of had some choice words about them losing sponsorship because of Rush's controversial chat. So anyway, all of that to say, it's not going to affect the Atlanta market because both Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity are on 750 AM, which is a Cox Media station. So anyway, it's not going to affect the people here who like to listen to those guys, but it will affect other cities. And I would just like to throw out there to CEO Lou Dickey, if you want a great talk radio host, give me a call. Just saying.
Self-plug.
Right.
Self-plug.
Oh, totally. shameless self-promotion right there. At Dana H. Barrett on Twitter, facebook.com/TheDanaBarrett. Let's just throw out all the shameless
further plugs.
Self-promotion. Yeah, why not, right?
Why not?
All right, moving on. Let's talk a little bit about the Falcons. Last week, I was telling you guys that the Falcons were considering moving from that south site in town for the new stadium to a slightly more northern site. Now, keep in mind, this is all still within the downtown area. So when I say north, don't think they're moving to Alpharetta. They're not moving to Alpharetta.
That would not be a good thing.
I don't think the Alpharettans, is that what you call them?
Alpharettians.
Yeah, I don't think they would like it because the traffic that would cause would be outrageous. But in any case, the point is that last week when we all hung out together here on this lovely show, we didn't really know what was going to happen. They had an August 1st deadline with the two churches that were sort of in question down on the south site. But now they have officially said they are moving away from that south site. The deals were not able to close. And so now they are looking at this new site, which is slightly more north of where the current Georgia Dome is. So just to keep that in mind as you are around the water cooler on Monday and you want to sound like you know what's going on. While we're on sports, I'm going to sound like I really care about sports today, which is kind of not the case. But here's something that came up that I thought everyone should know about. There is a new bag policy set for Falcons games this fall. Now, this is a policy that comes from the NFL, but I think the teams are sort of allowed to institute this at their leisure. And the Falcons have decided to go forward with this. And so basically what it's saying is it's limiting the size and type of bags that you can bring into the stadium with you. And obviously it's for security reasons. But one of the things that I thought was most interesting about this is that you really, based on what I'm reading, and I'm going to encourage everyone to Google this for themselves before you go to a game, but you really can't bring a normal purse. And so for women, like, my purse is like my left arm. Like, having to leave my purse behind is like asking me to give up my firstborn.
She's holding it right now, by the way.
I'm clutching it.
Yes.
To my breast. It's not, I can't go anywhere without it. And when I do, I feel very uncomfortable. And so they say a small clutch bag, approximately the size of a hand, with or without a handle or strap, is allowed. And you can bring clear plastic bags with things in them. So you can do that and your clutch bag. But here's my question. And this is where I have to just sort of bring it to a conversation. And feel free to tweet if you want to let your opinions be known. Use the hashtag BizRadio, B-I-Z Radio. But here's the thing. If a law exists and no one knows it, or a rule exists and no one knows it, what happens when they break the rule? So, of course, this happened in airports when they first made the 3-ounce rule, and they said you can't bring nail clippers or razors to shave your face or whatever. They had, you know, huge bins of these things that people brought because they didn't know. And then, of course, in my own personal life, I got pulled over recently for a law that I didn't know about. I didn't know about the move over law, that you're supposed to move over to the left lane if the cops are in the right lane with somebody. I had no idea. I slowed down to 40 miles an hour. I thought I was being totally responsible, and I got pulled over and I got a ticket.
That's funny you mentioned that, because that happened to me too, because I didn't know about it, and somehow I talked my way out of it. But,
oh, I'm so jealous.
But of course, this was in Alabama, so that
mine
made
was
you
too. Yes.
Really?
Yes.
This was
Alabama.
Back, this was 4 years ago.
Damn those Alabamans. But yeah, so here's the thing. If you don't know, if you weren't paying attention to this new bag law for the Falcons games, and you show up at a game with your purse, what are they going to do? Are they going to send you home? Are they going to try to take your purse? Like, I'm not.
That's a good question.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you parked, you know, half a mile away, you're going to just be irritated that you have to walk back to your car and put your purse away. But what if you took MARTA? Or you know what I mean? Or you took a cab or I don't know. I don't know. This is why I wanted to help get the word out, because I know if that happened to me, I would be really frustrated. So yeah. Women especially, I mean, I'm sure there are some men out there with merces. But, you know, women primarily, this is going to affect you. And I would just say, Google this, make sure you know what the rules are before you show up at your Falcons game with your beautiful, you know, Louis Vuitton or Gucci, you know, very expensive and very large purse. So just keep that in mind as you head out, because frankly, believe it or not, even though it's the heat of the summer, the preseason opener the first preseason opener is next week, I think, right?
I think you're right.
Against the Cincinnati Bengals, according to my notes. Like, I really know about sports. Very impressed, aren't you?
Yes.
All right, and while we're on the topic of sports, I have a list, and I love lists. So Forbes says Atlanta is the number 2 most miserable sports city in the U.S., second only to Seattle. And we were number 1 in the past, so we've actually gotten a little better, if you want to look at it that way.
Less bad is probably the more accurate.
Less bad. Come on, people. I'm from the Northeast. Step it up. I know you love your college sports, but can't we try to support the national teams, or, you know, our real teams? What do you call that? Major League? Whatever? I don't know. What's the word? I'm now proving that I know nothing about sports with this ongoing chatter.
The non-Northeast teams?
Right.
Is what you're trying to say?
Right. Try to support your non-college teams. Professional, okay. That's the word I'm looking for.
All right.
And this is a business show. You would think the word professional would be at the top of my mind, but no. Apparently, I'm just unprofessional. All right, we've got some clips today, as always, here on the Week in Review from some great stuff that happened on Business Radio X in the prior week. The first clip today is from Atlanta Business Radio. That show airs on Mondays, and the hosts are Stone Payton and Lee Cantor. And this week, they interviewed some folks from Tie Atlanta, including serial entrepreneur Bill Crossley, Angel Marquez, and Kabir Bardet. They were also guests. But this clip is about Bill Crossley giving some advice to entrepreneurs who are at the idea stage. And what's notable for me in this clip is that he's talking about getting the right people on the team. So let's take a listen, and then we'll talk some more about it.
Now, when you're working and you're mentoring one of these people that are at the idea stage, can you kind of walk us through what that conversation or initial conversations are like?
Well, they're quite interesting. You hear business ideas coming from every different direction. I think it's important to help the entrepreneur to be frame their concept with a view toward what's this business going to look like after you've put it together, and what's the business going to look like after it achieves success. In my mind, the young entrepreneur ought to be looking toward the end game of his multi-million dollar enterprise. And when you do that, and you walk the dog backwards, it leads you to understand that perhaps team is more important than your product or your concept, and look at the market opportunity in the global sense. And just generally envision that company as it's going to be 5 years from now when you want to sell it and cash out. That's the American dream. Build it, run it, sell it. That's the mantra of the American entrepreneur.
All right, again, that was a clip from Atlanta Business Radio. You can hear that entire show at atlantabusinessradio.businessradiox.com. And the thing that I think is really interesting, and I want to talk a little bit more about this after the break, but a lot of these guys in business have picked up on some really great concepts from all the books that are out there and all the advice that's out there. He gets that we want a good team, that it's about team. It's about, you know, getting the right people on the bus, which is a hot button for me. I'm a big believer in that. But then he talks more about the money in the business and the getting out plan and sort of the old school vision of what, you know, defines entrepreneurship in America. So I want to talk some more about that, and we will do that right after the break.
On the Family presents Today I Will. Today, I will learn about the movies my kids want to see. Here's Plugged In's Bob Waliszewski with your Today I Will tip.
Well, first of all, you can't rely on the ratings. When it comes to the actual content of the film, the ratings provide a very limited amount of information. And I would say that before you go to the movie, or even say yes, find out what's inside the movie. It only takes a couple of minutes to check it out, whether you go to Plugged In Online or another family-friendly website. In most cases, you'll be glad you did your homework. It's okay to make the right choice to protect your family.
Fall is a season of new activities, of new beginnings, a chance to change. What will you do today? Get more Today I Will parenting tips and resources at todayiwillthrive.com/fall.
Packers.
Vikings.
Red State.
Blue State.
We come from different places.
Uptown.
Downtown.
We come to different conclusions.
Half empty.
Half full.
But no matter how different we are, we're all connected, and we can all make a difference. That's why United Way brings people, expertise, and resources together to improve the education, income, and health of our communities. The building blocks for a better life. When we live united, our efforts, magnified by others, add up to real change. Children succeed in school, families gain financial stability, the health of our neighbors improves, and suddenly, so do our communities. But real change won't happen without you.
Live united.
So let's look beyond our differences.
Live united.
One by one, let's make a difference. Let's reach out a hand to one and influence the condition of all.
Live united.
Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Sign up today at liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
All right, we are back. I was just enjoying the music again. This happens every week. I get so into the jazz.
It's a jazzy...
Yeah.
Just dance... You just want to dance around.
Yeah, it's great. I love it. All right. Well, we are back. And before the break, we were talking a little bit about the ideas behind some of the new kind of theories of how to make business better and how business is changing kind of in the current times. And one of the things that I like about what the clip, you know, what Bill Crosley in the clip had to say was sometimes, and this is very true, I think, most people looking for funding we'll start to hear this message if they're entrepreneurs, that it's not so much about your product, it's about your team. And the reason for that is, while there are cool innovations and there are cool products and whatever, if you don't have the right people to do all the different parts of the business, you won't succeed. So if you just have a cool product, but you don't have a good money person, a good marketing person, a good salesperson, business, you know, all the different areas you need to make your business really flourish, you're not going to succeed. So personality often sells business more than product, right? And so, and this becomes more and more true with time. I mean, I think we're getting away from the model of, you know, just a slick product and more into relationship building. And all of sales is really now about relationship building. And so, so I think it's really cool that Bill gets that. Not to pick on poor Bill, who I've never actually met. But the thing that I also think is interesting, and I've seen this not just with Bill Crossley, but with lots of people that I've spoken to who have been in the corporate world for a long time, and what does that mean, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, whatever, who are grasping some of these newer concepts like get the right people on the bus, and that it is all about relationships, and that the younger generations especially, but really everyone now, is more interested in having a purpose and doing meaningful work and having something behind what they do other than just the money they're going to make. A lot of people have found themselves at a crossroads in their careers where they've said, you know what, I'm making a lot of money, I'm successful, quote unquote, but I'm not happy. I'm not fulfilled. I'm not satisfied. I want more out of my life, and I want to get some of that at work. Yes, I can go do volunteer work on the weekends, or yes, I can get meaning out of my relationships and my family and all of those things, but I also want to have purpose and meaning in my job. And so that's one of the things that I think sometimes these executives who are so used to things being a certain way miss out on. I think a lot of people that are starting businesses now, yes, of course they'd like to sell their business in 5 years and make a bajillion dollars. But that's not always the goal. I think sometimes the goal really is to make change, to improve the world in some way. And, you know, I'm glad to see, I think, you know, change for these type of business executives is going to happen one step at a time. And the fact that they're grasping some of these concepts, you know, this week it was Bill Crossley saying, yes, get the right people on the bus. Last week I had a clip with the vice president from Doherty Systems, Andrew, I forget his last name right now, I apologize, Andrew, but saying, you know, that we pay more than market value. We really want our employees to want to work for us, and we want to take that salary conversation off the table. Well, that's also really progressive. But he, too, had some other very, you know, old-school ideas about things. And so baby steps, I think, to get these executives to adopt some of these new theories. But and baby steps is better than no steps, right? Yeah. But it's very interesting, and it's fun to kind of watch. I've been, as I've mentioned in the previous shows, I've been really kind of into these business books lately, so I'm kind of like, you know, like a true believer at the moment. I'm sure I'll become cynical again in another few weeks. Just give me time. But right now, I'm sort of embracing a lot of what the research is showing and the science is showing, and that's not always real world, and I do realize that. So these real world guys are sort of starting to embrace a little bit of the research and a little bit of the science, but they're also, they have their foot in the door. They know what the banks want. You know, they know what customers want. So I guess I have to give them a break. But that brings me to the other clip that I have today from Business Radio X. And this is from a show that we did last Wednesday at the Midtown studio. It's the Good Morning Atlanta show. And I was hosting this show, and I had three really interesting people on. One of them is a fiction writer, a novelist, if you will, author Jeffrey Small, who wrote, his first book was called The Breath of God, and his second book is called The Jericho Deception. And he really, if you're into fiction and you like sort of suspense and that type of thing, like the Dan Brown, Da Vinci Code sort of stuff, you would like Jeffrey Small's work because it's that kind of stuff. It's, there's a, you know, fast-paced suspense angle to it, but it's also got a very kind of spiritual, like mystical, like science versus religion sort of bent to it, like a sort of question about where can those things live together. And anyway, really interesting stuff. But Jeffrey also is a really interesting guy. And in this clip, he is talking about why he chose to be a novelist. So take a listen to this.
Well, I actually, since we're on a business radio show right now, I mean, I began my career in business, and I still, I'm still CEO of a real estate company. And but for me, I was running a large real estate company back in the 90s and the 2000s. It was a family company, and I had achieved a lot of success. I kind of had checked off at a young age all the goals that I thought I'd wanted to do, and was looking around, and it's like, is this bringing me true happiness and true joy? I mean, I had the big house, I had fancy cars, at times I was flying on private planes, and buying cool artwork, And but I wasn't fulfilled. And I came to realize that there was a difference between success and significance. And for me, I'd achieved those trappings of success, but I was looking for a deeper meaning in my life. I was curious about religion, spirituality. My wife then said, Jeff, you know, you need to start learning how to meditate. I was very much a type A personality, or you're going to have a heart attack before you're 40. So I started a meditation practice, and I had also this strong creative yearning. It was like a calling deep within me that I would try to ignore, and that business at time could satisfy. I was somewhat of a deal junkie. So when I was in a creative process of a deal, that piece of me could be fulfilled. But most of my day wasn't like that. It wasn't the creative rush of a new deal. And so I had a folder in my desk that was called Story Ideas. Because part of me, like a lot of people, I kind of wanted to write that great American novel one day. And having this kind of strong academic background, I'd done all this reading in my past. But I never took that desire seriously. It was always a dream that I was going to do one day. And I would have days at work where I'd be kind of bored sitting around. And all of a sudden, the idea for a story would come. And I would jot it down and stick it in my folder in my desk for that one day when I would write the book. And then all of a sudden, as I was sitting there one day, I realized, you know, when does this one day happen? Is it when I retire? Is it when I have enough money? And then, you know, what is enough money? It's like it didn't seem to matter how much I would make and how successful that, you know, the house would get bigger and the cars would get more expensive. There was never really enough. And then I realized one day is always in the future. And it was a simple epiphany about that. And when I had that, that day I began writing The Breath of God, my first novel.
All right, again, that was author Jeffrey Small. His newest book is The Jericho Deception. You can find it on Amazon and anywhere books are sold, frankly. And if you want to hear the rest of the interview, you can go to goodmorningatlanta.businessradiox.com. It was a great interview. Also on that show was a guy named David Papa, who kind of works in helping people find meaningful work and helping companies figure out how to do meaningful work. And also, Jennifer Schwartz joined me on that show. She owns the Jennifer Schwartz Gallery in Virginia Highlands and also has an organization called Crusade for Art, where she's sort of trying to help bring art to the masses, get people who are not interested in collecting art understanding how to do that and help get artists who are new get some exposure. So that's a really whole other subject. I could talk a whole hour about that. One of the things I talk about with my friends all the time, this is going to show you how boring I am right now, is that there's a gap when you go to theater and when you go to you know, cultural events around town, you see a lot of people with white hair and you don't really see a lot of young people. And so we talk a lot about how can we get younger people, whether it's, you know, 20-somethings, newly marrieds, just out of college, people sort of coming out to some of these cultural events. And I think there are cultural events that are aimed towards younger people, but some of these really like staid places, you know, the Fox, the Atlanta History Center, places like that, really need younger people to come out and support them, or they won't survive, which is a whole, again, a whole other side story. So we could do a whole show on that. But getting back to what Jeffrey had to say about success versus significance, I think that's, you know, something really important for a lot of people. And Jeffrey and I were joking about the fact that you know, we came up kind of in the, I'm just going to say the late 80s, so maybe that'll make me sound a little teeny bit younger than I am. But, you know, we came up in the late 80s where it was all about, you know, remember the movie Wall Street? You know, it was all about, like, who could have the most stuff and who could have the biggest title and get the most money and get the most prestige and the most power. And that's the decade that we were raised in. And I think a lot of people in my age group and those maybe a little older, a little younger, came to a point where we said, you know, okay, I have that. I have reached a certain level in my career. I have success, quote unquote, but I don't feel good about it. I don't like what I'm doing. And the fact is that not because you're doing something bad in being in corporate America, but because you're not doing something that's meaningful to you. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be saving the world. You don't have to give it all up, you know, and go to a third world country and help them with their medical problems. On the other hand, if the work is not meaningful to you, and you're spending 40, 50, 60, 70 hours a week on it, that's a large part of your life. And we can call it a modern day midlife crisis. We can call it whatever you want to call it. But when you wake up one day and you say, you know what? I'm spending a lot of time on this. And I liked my new car for a minute after I got it. And then I got over it. And so how can I find a balance here where I'm still earning a living? You know, I don't want to become, I don't want to, you know, become Buddha and throw it all off and go sit in the woods somewhere. I mean, that's not what I'm saying, but I want to find meaning in those hours of my day. So it's really interesting. I think there's a lot of talk about that now. And I think the millennials are really into not just working for money, but working for passion, working for love, working for what means something to them. So, you know, I like to see everybody, I step out of their comfort zone a little bit. It takes courage sometimes to admit even what your passion is, let alone go after it. Because, don't you think?
Absolutely.
I mean, I think people often are discouraged by the more quote-unquote practical folks in their life. You know, mom and dad might say, you know, Mike, why do you want to be in this radio business? That's not practical. You need to put on a suit and tie and go be a corporate guy, right? But, and Mike's like, they didn't say that.
Well, they may have said that when I was in high school, but once I actually started doing radio, they were very much behind me following it and following it through.
Well, that's a funny point too, actually, because one of the other things that Jeffrey and I were saying to each other is that, you know, the millennials are coming from a different place because, you know, again, we were raised in the 80s and let's pretend I'm really young, 80s and 90s, to go after the money, right? But we raised our kids to go after what they were passionate about because we didn't get to do that. And so, you know, my daughter, who is finishing up or about to be a senior in college, is going after what she's interested in. She's not looking at jobs solely because of what they can provide from a dollar standpoint. So anyway, I think it's just pretty pretty fascinating stuff. So we need to take a quick break. No, we don't? Mike's waving at me. I don't know what that means. Do we not?
Yeah, we do.
Oh, do we want to play the clip? Let's play the clip. We have a third clip. He's looking at me like, Mike, help me out here, man.
We need to take a break. That's what I was pointing towards the computer. But
I thought you were going to play the bumper music that I like so much. That was my clue for the... We really need to work this out. Oh, there it is. Oh, now I'm happy again.
No, you need to give me some kind of indicator, like...
That I want to take a break?
Yeah, like, we probably need to take a break.
Don't you love this show? We're just rolling by the seat of our pants here, having a good time. But we are going to take a break, and then we'll play our third clip. We'll be right back.
Kevin McCullough is committed to replace confusion with clarity and empower you to become a binge thinker. Kevin McCullough, weekdays at 5 right here on Biz 1190, a tune-in radio station.
Join us for the third annual Celebrate Freedom 5 and 10K, brought to you by Marina's Athletics 8 Activewear, ChristianRunners.org, and Maranatha House Ministries. Saturday, August 31st at Jim R. Miller Park. Get all the details and sign up now at CelebrateFreedomRun.com.
Is the separation of church and state constitutional? This is Law and Justice with Jay Sekulow.
My daughter is in high school and she's writing a paper on the inconsistencies of the separation of church and state rulings. Can you give me a few, like, I really like, you know, here we have on our national currency, In God We Trust, yet, you know, we can't pray in the schools. Like, one irony is that they said it's unconstitutional to pray in schools, yet doesn't our Senate and Congress pray before their session?
But they actually have paid chaplains. I mean, and you can pray in school, but you can't have the government involved in it. But I'm glad your daughter's writing a book report or a report on this, because you could actually write an encyclopedia on the inconsistencies of the Supreme Court. We've got a great discussion on the website that talks about this issue, and it even has a section that says, does the Constitution actually require that the separation of church and state keep religion out of the public schools? And there's a discussion that takes place there. So go to the website.
Visit us at aclj.org. That's aclj.org.
From Wall Street.
We have a pro-growth agenda. Part of the agenda is growing exports.
They're central to our future.
To Main Street.
The trickle-down effect could hit your portfolio.
We've got you covered.
We've got you covered.
Biz 1190. The latest numbers from the markets.
Every recovery begins with a surge and then sort of throttles back.
Housing and real estate news.
And I believe the people who have created these problems need to be the ones who pay for these problems.
The job market and your retirement.
So our imperative was to stop that free fall and reverse direct, to get our economy moving and get jobs growing again.
Rely on Biz 1190 to bring you honest, in-depth analysis of everything money.
Governments don't create jobs. Create jobs. And our job as government is trying to make sure we're creating the conditions that allow businesses to prosper so they can hire people back.
We are Biz 1190.
We are Biz 1190.
Always right on the money. Biz 1190. Weather.
Times of clouds and sunshine this afternoon with a high of 89. We'll see a few patchy clouds tonight, a low dropping down to 69 degrees. Tomorrow looks pretty nice. Clouds and sun once again, high back up to 89. But by Tuesday, maybe a few more clouds around. We'll have to keep an eye out for a thunderstorm, a high of 88. Times of clouds and sun Wednesday with a shower or thunderstorm around in the afternoon. At Wednesday of 89, then turning off partly sunny by Thursday. Shower, thunderstorm possible at a high of 89. I'm AccuWeather meteorologist Brian Thompson for Biz 1190.
All right, we are back. I'm Dana Barrett with producer Mike Roy. You are listening to the Weekend Review.
Yes, you are.
Yeah, and you know what happened before the last break? I was finding meaning in my work. I was feeling passionate about my job, and I lost track of time. That's what happened. That's my excuse, anyway.
Yes, and she's sticking to it.
And I'm sticking to it. And I'm not, I promised to be sweet to Mike today, so I can't really make pretend like that was his fault, because it wasn't, it was my fault. And I have to say, we need to work out some better hand signals, Mike and I, you know, so that we can communicate about these breaks. But, you know, whatever, who cares? We're having a good time. We're catching people up on what's going on around Atlanta. And, you know, it's all good. So speaking of which, I have a couple other quick news stories I want to hit you with about stuff going on around town. First of all, State Farm adding 800 jobs here in the lovely city of Atlanta. That's in addition to the 500 jobs that they said they would be adding also. So really, it's 1,300 new jobs. And here's the cool thing. It's not like they know who those people are. They're not flying people in and placing them here. They're hiring here in Atlanta, and they're actually hosting a career fair August 6th and 7th, that's this week. So focus, people. If you need a job and you're interested in going to work for State Farm, they're holding a job fair August 6th and 7th. It's at the Westin Atlanta Perimeter. So go online, Google that, and go out there and look, because you never know. And they're not just looking for experience. They're looking for entry-level people as well. Some technical jobs. If you're an IT person, there may be something there for you. So, you know, check it out if you're in the market for a job. Things are getting better, but not everybody is. Just because statistics say things are getting better doesn't mean they're getting better for you. So this could be your chance. So check that out. Also, I always like to sort of keep people up to date on what's happening with this development here in Buckhead. Our studio's in Buckhead, so we drive past all this construction every day, right? And one of the things that's happening, well, so the cranes have started moving. You know, construction is sort of back happening again here in Buckhead. And now the Buckhead Atlanta development has landed their first restaurant. It's called the Shake Shack. The Shake Shack.
Nice.
Yes. It is a burger, hot dog, and frozen custard stand from Manhattan restaurateur Danny Meyer and the Union Square Hospitality Group. I'm raising an eyebrow. My eyebrow's up, because I'm not sure if that's what I'm thinking. I mean, maybe it's like a classy Shake Shack, but I think of a Shake Shack as being like something on the boardwalk in New Jersey. No offense to the Jersey Shore folks, but I'm sure it's an upscale version. It has to be an upscale version of that, right? Doesn't it?
A classy Shake Shack. I'm just trying to
picture that.
Picture that.
Me too. So, meanwhile, there's three or four other restaurants, I think, set to make it official that they're going to be there. And I think the real thing that's fueling some really good fire over there is that Spanx has agreed to be sort of the first anchor office tenant, and they're also going to be opening a flagship retail store. Spanx is there, so that's going to bring all the ladies in the Spanx store. Okay, also, Vonage, we were talking about sort of a little bit about old-fashioned businessmen, not to call anyone out, but sort of living in a different, you know, world of what corporate used to be. And when you talk about things like that, it makes me think as an analogy about telephones. You know, we all had home phones for a long time, and we had our home phone number, and, you know, our telemarketers called us during dinner, and the home phones started to become more and more annoying and whatever, and expensive, and all of that. They were more reliable at the time than when cell phones came out. You know, you still could count on your home phone. You couldn't always count on your cell phone. Well, that's sort of not true anymore. Now you can really count on your cell phone. I frankly haven't had a home phone for a long time, and I don't need one, and I can't imagine why I would ever need one again. A lot of people, though, haven't given up on the home phone. And some of them, 2.4 million, I believe it is, to be exact, have moved to voice over IP with Vonage. And the reason I bring it up is because there was a story in the news about Vonage. They have to work through traditional phone companies to get the actual phone numbers to be able to give to you. And I think it's the FCC that takes care of that. And they're changing how that all is going to work. And they're going to make it easier for companies like Vonage to get phone numbers directly without having to go through an intermediary phone company. So it's going to make it cheaper even than it is to have voice over IP. And the interesting thing to me was that the CEO of Vonage said something like, or I'm sorry, maybe it was the CFO that said it, don't quote me on this, people, but something about, like, this new direct access for phone numbers is the wave of the future in the phone business. And I'm thinking, no. I think the wave of the future, don't you think, okay, maybe this is just me with not enough experience and not enough understanding about people who live in other places that are not in great metro areas and with good cell coverage and all of that, but I feel like the home phone is going the way of the 8-track tape. I don't you think?
Well, no one's really getting a landline. It's the landlines that are still there, basically, they're just kept over, they're grandfathered in, if you will, from, I guess, the 90s is when they kind of started to go away.
Yeah. So I don't know.
I haven't had a landline since college. It was since my dorm, really.
Exactly. And I haven't had one for a number of years. I moved out of the suburbs where I had one in the house for many years back in 2010, and I haven't had a landline since, and I don't miss it. In fact, I feel better not having it because no telemarketers call me during dinner. You know, now I can control.
They're finding ways, at least this is the case for me, they're finding ways to call your cell phone.
Which sucks.
I still get harassed.
Yeah.
Not often, but still get harassed on my cell phone, and I don't know why.
That seems like it's, I know, I do too sometimes, and you can get on all those do not call lists and stuff like that, but it seems really, really unfair for them to do that, because you can be, depending on your plan, you can be charged for that.
Exactly.
Which is really not cool.
Not cool.
And I want to, and we're going to get to that in today's soapbox a little bit. We're going to touch on sort of a little bit about how companies just can irritate the living daylights out of you. But first, I want us to focus back a little bit on, creating change in your business life. And the Learning Insights show this week on Business Radio X, which is hosted by Stone Payton and Lee Cantor, had some interesting guests. One of them was Brent Darnell with the Brent Darnell International Group, which I don't know if that's a group of one. But he is actually known as a leading authority on emotional intelligence, and he's a pioneer in using emotional intelligence in the construction industry, of all things. Who would think? But he talks about training, and I love what he has to say about actually creating change in somebody and about the three-ring binder type of training. So take a listen to this clip.
Now, you have some very specific ideas about how to frame up learning opportunities and structuring everything down to the way the classroom should be structured and the instruction design. Speak to that a little bit.
Well, it's mostly because of abject failure throughout the course of my early dealings.
So scar tissue has informed your methodology.
Absolutely. And it was about, learning is to create change. And I kept doing these great programs that were a day long and go away and do the magic cross sign over everyone and they magically change, and that just didn't happen. And we've all been to those, I call them three-ring binder programs. You get your three-ring binder, right? And what do you do with it? You put it on the shelf and you never look at it again until a year later you need the binder, right? So you take everything out, throw it away, and you reuse the binder. So that to me was traditional training and learning. So there's got to be a better way. So we make sure that all of our programs are a year long with lots of follow-up and coaching and self-coaching and even coaching from families and friends and spouses. We bring them in on the process, and it's a year-long process. And then even at the end of the year, we have reunions every year where we check in. So it's continuous learning. It's ongoing learning.
All right, hit the brakes here for a minute. Yeah. So if you're working with me to help me become more emotionally intelligent, and there probably is some room for improvement on that front, you're going to get Holly and Katie and Kelly, my crowd, you're going to get my family involved in this process?
Yes.
And you get buy-in from the people on this?
No, we don't.
is this like a theoretical constraint, or this actually has been worked in the wild somewhere?
Actually working. and this is sort of recent, where we brought in the families and the spouses, but the results have just been life-changing.
Okay, again, that was Brent Darnell talking to Stone Payton and Lee Cantor on the Learning Insights show. To hear the rest of that interview, go to learninginsights.businessradiox.com. It's interesting. First of all, how many three-ring binders have you had that you've reused? Well, you're young, so you haven't probably been to a lot of trainings like that.
I haven't used a three-ring binder in a while.
Well, it's very old school even just having a three-ring binder, but I cannot tell you when he described that, I can envision myself going back onto my shelf and throwing out the contents and putting in something else that I needed, So he was totally spot on with that, and also with the fact that you cannot make real change in your way of being in a two-day or a one-day training. So I thought that was good stuff. Go listen to the rest of that show. We are going to take a quick break, and the soapbox will be coming out for the last segment of the show. Get ready.
Have you heard the news? Silver is on sale. For the first time in decades, silver is trading below its production cost for global mining companies. That's right. Silver, one of the oldest forms of wealth, is now trading at a discount to its all-in cost of production. This is your opportunity to invest in silver at prices that may not be seen again. And Lear Capital is making it easier than ever to own. Buy silver on sale and get up to $500 worth of silver free with a qualifying purchase. That's right. Up to $500 worth of silver coins free. Call 1-800-260-4461 now. And if you ask about our IRA special, you'll also get our free investor's kit delivered right to your door. Don't miss out on this rare opportunity to own silver below its all-in cost of production. This offer ends when silver prices spike again. So call now, 1-800-260-4461. Supplies are limited. That's 1-800-260-4461.
Kaiser Permanente has received some of the highest possible rankings in member satisfaction, patient safety, and overall quality of care. To learn more, visit kp.org.
More than 100 million wild animals are killed each year, illegally. Poaching is just one of the risks animals face at our hands. The best way to protect wildlife is to protect the land where they live. The Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust works with private landowners to protect wildlife, to preserve natural habitats, and establish permanent sanctuaries. To learn more or to work with the Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust, call 800-729-SAVE. That's 800-729-SAVE. Or visit wildlifelandtrust.org. Thank you.
Focus on the Family presents Today I Will. Today, I will teach my family to help others. Here's Ken Blanchard, co-author of the book, Lead Your Family Like Jesus, with your Today I Will tip.
You know, we think that every family ought to have a mission statement. What is your purpose for your family? In our family, we said we wanted to create a family where the kids and all of us were good citizens and gave back and made a difference in the community. If we did a good job, that would really be happening, that the kids would be excited about serving in the community and helping and all. It wasn't about us. It was about how do we get outside the family and make a difference out there.
Fall is a season of new activities, of new beginnings, a chance to change. What will you do today? Get more Today I Will parenting tips and resources at todayiwillthrive.com/fall.
With traffic reports that are always right on the money, this is Atlanta's Biz 1190.
All right, we are back. This is the Business Radio X Week in Review. I'm Dana Barrett with producer Mike Roy, and we are ready to get the soapbox out, do some complaining. Okay, so every week I feel like, I think, you know, what am I going to talk about next week on the show? Surely nothing will happen to me of interest this week that I'll want to bring up. But every week something happens that I feel like I have to share with you guys. So this week, now this is something that's been bothering me for a long time, but it came to a head for me this week because, well, I'll tell you the whole story, but here's the issue. Companies now have decided that with the popularity of social media, with Twitter, with Facebook, with Foursquare, with all of these things, that they no longer have to spend any money on marketing, or very little, or much less, because they can just go out to the marketplace and ask their constituents, their customers, clients, whatever, patrons, to do the work for them. And this really, really irritates me. And it's most obvious in the survey world. How many times in the last week have you been asked to complete a survey or rate and review a product? You know what? Stop asking me. I do not want to work for you unless you're going to pay me. If you, in the old days, they used to do market studies. In fact, I got a phone call randomly this week with someone asking me to participate in a market study, like in person, and they actually offered to pay me $250 to show up and do a market study. And I was like, wow, that still exists? That's really cool. Because most of the companies nowadays are sending out a survey, and this is, first of all, a lot of them just say, hey, you know, thanks for buying that toilet plunger. Can you now rate and review it or take this survey on how we're doing?
Rate and review a toilet plunger.
I am not kidding you. It doesn't matter if you buy a screwdriver, a toilet plunger. Like, if you buy one of those things on Amazon.com, not to call out Amazon because all the companies do this, they literally will send you an email saying, how's that toilet plunger working out for you? I mean, are you kidding me?
It does its job.
Right. I haven't used it yet, and I'm hoping I'll never
have to. I'm not sure what else I can do to help you out in this review.
Oh, my goodness. And then, okay, so let's say that you have just too much time on your hands, which I'm going to argue most of us do not. But let's just say you, for some reason, you like this company enough that you decide, okay, I'm going to click through and take this survey. First of all, some of them don't offer you a thing to take their stupid surveys. Can you tell how I really feel about this? Some of them don't offer you a thing. They just ask you to take the survey. Some of them do this. They say, hey, Mike Roy, you just bought a pair of headphones. Take this survey for a chance to win a free cup of coffee or whatever, right? And so first of all, they're not even giving you a free cup of coffee. They're just offering you the chance to win a free cup of coffee or some other low-value item, a $25 gift certificate or something. But you're only getting a chance, one in a bajillion chance. So they're asking for some amount of your time, and at this juncture, you don't know how much that time is because you're just looking at the email right now and you're thinking about whether or not you want to complete this survey. Fine. You click the button. You say, okay, fine. I want to win that $25 gift certificate or that cup of coffee or whatever, so I'll do it. I like XYZ company enough that I'll do it. So you click through, and you start taking the survey, and it's not three questions. It's not 3 minutes of your time. It's like a 50-question survey where they want you to spend a significant amount of time taking this freaking survey. And can I still just say, no, unless you want to pay me to do work for you, I'm not interested.
Sounds a bit insecure when they extend the question.
I am so glad you said that also, because don't you think, like, prior to the online shopping world and prior to all this Facebook and social media and Twitter and yada yada, that when you were shopping in the mall, if you purchased a toilet plunger, probably not at the mall, but, you know, at Home Depot or whatever, and you were walking out into the parking lot with your toilet plunger, this survey thing is the equivalent of the Home Depot clerk chasing you out of the store into the parking lot saying, how'd I do? How'd I do? How'd I do?
Rate me, please.
Right, rate me. Do you like me? Do you like me? Do you like me? Oh, my Lord. So here's my suggestion. First of all, companies, stop with the surveys. If you can't figure out, I'm okay with you giving people a place to go and rate and review the product, but just let the place be there. Put it in the receipt, just at the bottom, say, if you want to rate and review this product, click this link. Don't send me a whole separate email and clog up my email box with your requests, A. And B, if you want me to do a survey, A, make it 3 questions long, and B, offer me something in exchange for my time. Something concrete, not a chance to win something, an actual something. To give a company credit, Starbucks, I think, has a survey where they actually will give you a free cup of coffee if you complete the survey. That's legitimate. Bed Bath & Beyond, I think if you complete the survey, you get a 20% off coupon. If you shop there enough, you know, some places like that. So some of them get it. Still, the surveys are way too long, way too long. And, you know, we've talked about this in a variety of areas, but if I liked my toilet plunger, I am now irritated. And I had a good shopping experience with you, Amazon or Home Depot or whoever. And now you've chased me out of the store saying, do you like me? Do you like me? Do you like me? Now I don't like you anymore because now you're annoying. Now you are annoying me. You are interfering with my life. You are messing me up.
It was fun while it lasted.
Right. So I said I was going to tell you why I got all on this week. Here's what happened. I'm not going to call out this company because I want to tell you that they ultimately sort of did handle it okay. But here's what happened. A company that I love and that I deal with on a regular basis sent an email that said, we would like you to take our survey. And in exchange, we are going to give you a coupon for a significant amount of product, you know, $10 worth of product. And I buy $50 worth of product from this company every month. So $10, that's, you know, I can use that. Great. So I say, fine, I hate surveys, but I'm going to do it because I want this coupon. So I click through and I spend you know, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes, answering just the first set of questions that determine whether or not they really want to know what I have to say. How old am I? How much household income? You know, am I male or female? Where do I live? What state? And then how much do I use XYZ product, right? And I get through the first five or six questions. And by the way, here's a bad technology for you. In between each question, I click submit, and it had to crank and reload the page. So instead of just putting 10 questions on one page so I could get through it more quickly, I had to wait as it cranked in between each question. So that's also a waste of my time, but fine. So I get to the end of question number five, and it says, oh, yeah, sorry, we don't really care what you think. So never mind, and you're done. Like, basically, I answered those questions in such a way that they already had enough people from my state or my age or who didn't, or I didn't use enough of the product they were asking about or whatever, that now this offer that they sent to me, I will give you a coupon for $10, they've now rescinded because I'm not good enough. So now this company that I'm a huge brand ambassador for, that I love, that I always talk about how great they are, has just made me feel unworthy and depressed and sad and angry.
Saving the most important one for last, because that would be what I felt.
So
I would feel.
Oh, my God. I was so irritated. So I emailed them, and I said, hey, you people, you offered me a $10 coupon for filling out your survey. I clicked on your survey, and I filled it out to the best of my ability. The fact that you don't want my opinion and does not mean you cannot not give me the coupon, you stinkers. So they gave me the coupon, in fairness to them, which is why I'm not calling them out right now and bad-mouthing them by name, because they actually did say, oh, sorry about that. This is how we usually do it, and they gave me the coupon. But I also threw in there that I do talk radio and that I was going to be talking about it on my show. So maybe that influenced why I got the coupon. I don't know. But the point is, it was a bad move on their part. Like, don't offer me something and then not give it to me if I'm not good enough. Because my love for that company now has diminished a tiny little bit. Yeah, I still like their products. I'm still okay with their service for the most part. But now my love is, it's like being, you know, married for a long time. I'm now seeing your dirty socks on the floor, company I love, and I don't want to. So my advice to companies out there, stop the crazy surveys. And if you do need to do them, either A, give people something in exchange, or B, keep them to three questions.
Make them shorter.
Yeah, three questions. Do you like me? Yes, no,
how
maybe.
Did I do? That's it.
Great. Yeah, how did I do? Great, stinky.
Have a good day.
Right, the end. All right, before we leave you for the hour, let me remind you that there are lots of great programs coming up this week on Business Radio X. High Velocity Radio is on Mondays at 10 a.m. Atlanta Business Radio at 11:30 a.m. on Mondays. The Burr and Foreman Results Matter Show is on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. You can find out about all of these shows on businessradiox.com. Of course, you're going to tune into Good Morning Atlanta, my show, Wednesdays. At 10 a.m., I have John E. Parkerson Jr. from the World Trade Center Atlanta coming on, so that'll be great. All right, this has been The Week in Review. I'm Dana Barrett. We'll see you next week.